I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
A little over a year ago, during the final week of January 2024, Eagles general manager Howie Roseman and head coach Nick Sirianni sat together on stage at the NovaCare Complex. It wasn't just a painful occasion.
There was a kind of sadness about the way the season ended. There was kind of a shell shock feeling that was going on.
It was awkward. It was clear that Sirianni was at risk of losing his job, that the Eagles took an extra long time to announce their end-of-season news conference only added to the tension. But after mulling it over for a few days, the Eagles decided to keep him.
You got to make sure that you're not overreacting to a result that, you know, maybe just kind of was an aberration in the moment. And then you got to look at maybe is the process right?
At the time, it all sounded like lip service. The Eagles had completely imploded after a 10-1 start. Sirianni himself seemed increasingly lost and unhinged. The players, quarterback Jalen Hurts chief among them, looked uninspired. Were Roseman and Sirianni really buying what they were selling? Or was all this optimism and hope nothing more than wishful thinking? Cover more than conviction?
I know when I have that connection with the guys on the football team, that's when the culture is working and working at high level. And then that's where our connection with the players and then their connection with each other works well, too.
It's not going to take a snap of the fingers. We got to work hard. We got to do whatever we can to have the right people. We have a lot of those pieces in place. This cover isn't even close to bare.
The Eagles' turnaround ended up being more of a snap than it wasn't. 53 weeks after Roseman and Sirianni stood in front of the media firing squad to reflect on a season, it was time to do it again, only this time separately and with one more game to play. With the Eagles back in the Super Bowl, the angst surrounding the team has given way to real excitement and anticipation. And while the mood has changed, the themes that Roseman and Sirianni echoed in a new Q&A sound mostly the same as they did this time last year.
I am very confident in our process, but you're dealing with human error here. Nobody is perfect in this process.
I have no doubt that I'm different than other head coaches, but I am myself. The only people I'm trying to lead is this football team.
I'm Jeff McClain, and this is Uncovering the Birds, a production of the Philadelphia Inquirer and KYW News Radio original podcast. It's Super Bowl week. Coming up on my first dispatch from New Orleans, we'll circle back on a story we covered earlier this season on the mind of Vic Fangio. As the veteran defensive coordinator continues to chase that elusive Super Bowl ring, I talked to some of the people closest to him in his life for some great stories.
He's serious for the most part, but he's caring, so that's why, you know, it works for me.
We'll also touch base later on with radio man Merle Reese, whose season started with his Hall of Fame induction and could end with a title call.
You have to play this game like it's the last chance you ever have.
But first, I'm going to give you your own credential and take you inside the NovaCare complex and fill you in on what Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni revealed in a session with reporters right before the Eagles set out for the Big Easy. I'm recording this episode Tuesday, February 4th, 5 days before Super Bowl 59 at the Caesars Superdome. I got to New Orleans on Sunday. There's already a heavy Eagles presence here. Monday night was Super Bowl opening night, one of the busiest, craziest events of the whole week. It was held at the Superdome with a lot of Big Easy flavor. Both the Eagles and Chiefs entered behind a local marching band and to raucous applause from fans who scored tickets. It's much different from how NFL media availabilities are usually conducted in season, and even later during Super Bowl week. Forget legit questions about the game, especially to the select few players on podiums. It's more about the spectacle than football.
Taylor!
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. Y'all gonna get y'all licked back?
That'd be nice. We'll see Sunday.
Taylor Swift song. She's an incredible artist, but you know, she ain't on my playlist.
How do I keep things fresh in the bedroom? Interesting. You know, I have an answer in my mind, but there's kids around, so maybe for another conversation.
The two most influential guys involved in shaping the Eagles' on-field product, however, spoke to a group of local beat reporters before the team left for New Orleans. General manager Howie Roseman and head coach Nick Sirianni. Me and other beat reporters met with them Saturday at the NovaCare complex. Roseman for about 30 minutes, Sirianni for 15. So I wanted to bring you inside that meeting and list out a couple of key takeaways. Let's start with Roseman. This was his first media availability since roster cutdown day at the end of training camp. A lot has happened since then, almost all of it making Roseman look like the best general manager in the NFL. He signed Saquon Barkley. He saw something in free agent diamonds in the rough like Zach Bond and Mekhi Becton. He drafted a cornerback duo in Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean that solidified the secondary. His previous big investments in the draft, Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Cam Jurgens, and N'Kobe Dean, all took crucial steps. This might have very well been the finest of Roseman's 15 years as GM. He's long had the trust of owner Jeffrey Lurie, but after this season, and how quickly the Eagles got back to a place that this time last year felt so distant, he's earned every right to feel bulletproof.
I'm not concerned about my job security, not because I'm on scholarship, just because, you know, I think at the end of the day, if you start worrying about that and not worried about what's best for the team, it changes your focus. I'm not going to stop taking risks, and at some point it gets me fired, I'd rather that than have any regrets. You know, I don't want to leave this job with regrets. I feel like I did the first time I did that, and I feel like since I've been back, for better or worse, I've done the things that I thought were the right things to do, and they haven't all worked out, for sure.
Roseman's stand-in with Eagles fans has been fickle until the team's recent sustained success. In a position like his, it's impossible to get everything right. But if you look at the Eagles' record during Roseman's tenure, combined with the caliber of players he's drafted, developed, and acquired, he's got the makings of a Hall of Fame-worthy resume, especially when you consider his longevity. In his 15 seasons as GM, the Eagles have a .571 winning percentage and have gone to the playoffs 9 times, been to the Super Bowl 3 times, and won once. In 11 seasons, when he had final say over the roster, Roseman's winning percentage is even better, at .614.
The season really starts with the front office, and that starts with me. And so when we have good off seasons, it usually leads to success during the regular season. And so I think that's our responsibility, and that's my responsibility, and we've seen it. You know, I mean, the three best years we probably have as front office have led to three Super Bowls, you know. So obviously the resources change from year to year, and I think an underrated key to getting back here was that we really had resources and really draft in 2022, 2023, and 2024 to allow us to have some flexibility. You know, and those are the things I think about going forward. You know, how can you get more flexibility when you have a lot of good players, deservedly so, making a lot of money?
Whether you agree with his moves or not, he's hard on himself. He puts a lot of time into the gig. One name that came up during Roseman's media availability over the weekend was Bryce Huff, a major disappointment. The veteran edge rusher was supposed to fill Hassan Reddick's shoes, but he never got going this year. Huff has battled injuries throughout his career, and 2024 was no different. He missed a chunk of the season with a torn ligament in his wrist. Roseman still believes.
I think the story's yet to be written on Bryce. Now, I'm stubborn. You know, I understand that. I'm stubborn on a lot of things, but I believe in the player. I think the guy's got unique ability in his body. I've seen it. You know, it's a little different for me in free agency with those kind of signings than it is maybe in draft picks, in terms of you've seen them go against the guys in the NFL and do things well.
This Sunday, Roseman gets to relive a full circle moment he experienced 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, his team going up against one of his mentors, Andy Reid. The 49-year-old broke into the Eagles front office in 2000. He rose quickly through the ranks with Reid's help. The dynasty that Reid has built in Kansas City is what Roseman and the Eagles aspire to be.
You have to think about how to beat the best. But it's a strange deal because, you know, I wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for Coach Reid. And 300 and, you know, without the 2 weeks here or the week we play him, we could talk and I could ask him anything. Obviously, they're the standard.
For as much success as Reid had in Philadelphia, Nick Sirianni has already led the Eagles to the Super Bowl twice in just 4 seasons, something that Reid did only once in his 14 years here. The Chiefs beat the Eagles in Super Bowl 57, 38-35, a game that was there for the taking. Sirianni has acknowledged several times since that loss that he might have done a couple things differently if he had the chance to do them again. He has repeatedly stood by his decision to punt early in the fourth quarter, however, when maybe he should have gone for it on fourth down versus a Kansas City offense that couldn't be stopped. It typically pays to be aggressive in the Super Bowl. But when he was pressed in last Saturday's interview session with reporters Whether he's glad that he and the Eagles are getting another shot at KC, Sirianni didn't take the bait.
No, I don't think that way. Maybe at one point in my life I might have, but like I think that comes with maturity. Like you go play the opponent that is next on your schedule, and this is a really good football team. And if had the Bills won, that would have been a really good football team. And had the Ravens won, that would have been a really good football team. I don't think I have one preference over the other. We're just ready to go out there and continue to work and play.
Personally, I'm not sure if I buy that. Yes, Sirianni has absolutely 100% showed signs of maturity this year. He pledged he was going to rein it in, and for the most part, he has. Except for a few public occasions, like at the end of the Browns game, when he was caught taunting a fan at Lincoln Financial Field. But who could forget Sirianni's cockiness as he walked off the field in Kansas City after the Eagles' big win there in 2023? Somewhere, deep down inside, that Sirianni still exists, even if he's managed to mute that part of his personality for most of the year. Sirianni was playful and loose when we met with him over the weekend, and he had every right to feel good. This season was tremendous vindication for him, particularly after the Eagles' shaky 2-2 start. His approach worked. His core values resonated. He reached his players and empowered his assistants. The team followed his lead. Remember last year? When Sirianni was asked this pointed question at his end-of-season press conference with Roseman.
If the offensive coordinator is going to be in charge of the offense and the defensive coordinator is going to be in charge of the defense, what is your role going to be?
The head coach.
Sirianni was an effective CEO this year. He managed everything to a T in the face of intense pressure and scrutiny going into the final year of his contract. Last Saturday at NovaCare, Sirianni explained how the job has calloused him personally and professionally.
I think my wife, she doesn't listen to anything, not to my knowledge, and my kids don't have to go through anything. They're pretty sheltered from that. As far as how it's calloused me, if you want your guys to get better, you have to get better yourself. And I think that none of us that are in these positions are going to live in a utopia where everybody likes you and everyone agrees with every. That's leadership, though. That's no matter what form of leadership you're in, you have to do what you think's best, and you got to lead the way you know how, and you got to get better as you lead and not really concern yourself with outside noise or outside criticism.
Sirianni's attitude is similar when it comes to his coaching staff, and more specifically, keeping it intact. A domino effect from the 2022 Super Bowl run was that lesser teams around the NFL started pursuing Sirianni's assistance. The Eagles could now be looking at their fourth offensive coordinator in as many years if Kellen Moore is hired by the New Orleans Saints. Moore helped breathe some life back into a system that, by Sirianni's own admission, got stale last year. Having an MVP candidate at running back didn't hurt either. But Sirianni knows how it goes. A rising tide lifts all ships.
I'd say I'd always had prepared for that, in the past as well, knowing that that's a reality when you have success. But my general thought on that doesn't mean every situation is a little different. But my general thought on that is, this is my and the Philadelphia Eagles staff, and I got a lot of faith in a lot of those guys upstairs.
If Moore takes the New Orleans job, he said he's only focused on the Super Bowl during opening night. Could Nick Sirianni stay in-house and promote longtime aide and passing game coordinator Kevin Petullo? The guess here is that he will look outside the building and that Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie would prefer an innovator. Quarterback Jalen Hurts would prefer to have some familiarity with the new offensive coordinator. He's already had 5 different play callers and played in 3 different schemes in his 5 NFL seasons. But maintaining continuity is difficult when your head coach doesn't call plays. These, of course, are matters for another day. Regardless of what happens in Super Bowl 59, things are expected to move quickly. But the Eagles have a title to play for first. And when it comes to innovative thinkers in the Eagles coaching ranks, no member of the staff has as strong a track record as defensive coordinator Vic Fangio. His impact on the team's fortunes this season is living proof. Next, hear from some of the people who know Fangio best about how he became one of the most influential minds in the NFL, and whether it's really true that no one's ever seen him laugh.
Philly sports fans, we get the obsession. We know you need more than the score and the stats. You need coverage that gives you the home field advantage. You need Inquire Sports. Whatever your game, we're on it with round-the-clock updates and all the insider info. Why? Because we share the obsession, and we bleed Philly just like you.
Get your Philly sports fix at inquire.com/sports. Your home field advantage for all things Philly sports.
Hey, this is Brian Seltzer. I love producing Uncovering the Birds and working with Jeff, just like I love working on the other podcasts we produce at KYW News Radio. We just launched a brand new show. It's called The Week in Philly. Pretty self-explanatory. It looks back and ahead at the biggest stories in the Philadelphia region with a longer lens than what you might hear on the radio. We've also got Gone Cold, exploring unsolved murders in the city. The Gone Cold team released a fantastic miniseries called Ricochet. It examines all the angles of the city's gun crisis. You got to check it out. Bridging Philly brings you stories that connect communities on the issues that matter most to you. And One-on-One has great conversations with people in sports you should absolutely know more about. So give the full slate of KYW News Radio original podcasts a listen. Download the free Odyssey app and follow KYW News Radio for Philly's best original podcasts right at your fingertips.
I'm Jeff McClain, and this is Uncovering the Birds. Vic Fangio may be the most innovative defensive coach to never win a Super Bowl. The closest he got in his 38 NFL seasons was 12 years ago when he was the coordinator for the 49ers and they lost to the Ravens. The site of that Super Bowl? New Orleans. Before the season even began, I asked Fangio if the lack of a title on his resume bothered him. He said he obviously wants to win one, but he's more of a big picture process guy. Still, he did confide in me that after that loss, he couldn't sleep. He got up out of bed and went for an early morning stroll in the French Quarter, frustrated and replaying the mistakes his otherwise stellar defense had made in the biggest game of the season. Fangio doesn't say much, but when he talks, he's straight and to the point. His gruff demeanor may throw off those who don't know him well. He's hard to make laugh. But there's a lot going on inside that quick-thinking mind. So for a profile I did for the Inquirer ahead of the Super Bowl, I spoke to a number of people who know Fangio the best. Colleagues, friends, players, and his girlfriend, Kathy Maruyama. Check the show notes for a link to the story. I wanted to get a better understanding of the 66-year-old coach, who could complete a full-circle season with an elusive Lombardi trophy in a year that started with a return to Philadelphia, where his professional career began 40 years ago with the Stars of the USFL. First up, I spoke to the man that helped Fangio get his foot in the door, Joe Marciano, who first met a high school-age Fangio in the Scranton suburb of Dunmore, Pennsylvania, when he was umpiring a Little League baseball game at a nearby playground.
If Vic didn't pursue football, I guarantee you, he would have been an umpire in the World Series. He was good.
Marciano was a young quality control assistant with the Stars when he recommended Fangio, who was then a graduate assistant at North Carolina, to coach Jim Mora. Fangio almost immediately stood out as a bright mind. Marciano recalled one early moment that suggested he had the makings of a future coordinator.
Well, I'll give you a great example, and it's probably one that no one knows. No one. And about the, you know, the zone defense, the zone dog.
Yep.
When you blitz linebackers and play zone behind it, which was unheard of. I think the year was 1984, and we were playing against the Birmingham Stallions. The quarterback was Cliff Stout. And every time they were in a traditional two-back, split-back set, they come up with an idea about bringing the outside linebacker to the strong side and the strong side inside linebacker and make them throw hop. This is pretty good stuff now.
I love it.
Yeah, so every time they were in the split-back set, make them throw hot because they couldn't protect it. Make a long story short, Vince Tobin said, we ain't going to do that. And Jim Moore, to his credit, he said, wait a minute, we might have something here. We might have something. So, yeah, they put on the tape and they can back it. Every time they were in that set, they did this certain protection. When we play them, it worked. Yeah, it worked very well. I mean, it worked like Vic said it would work. And I think from that day on, I think in Jim Mora's eyes, he got instant credibility.
The Stars won two USFL championships, and the NFL came calling for Mora. He took the Saints' job and brought many of his assistants along with him, including the young Fangio and Marciano. Hall of Fame general manager Jim Finks initially thought they weren't ready for the big time.
Mr. Finks did not want to hire me and Vic. And Jim convinced Mr. Finks that we can do the job.
Moore turned the losing franchise around in just a couple of years. The Dome Patrol defense was led by Fangio's position group, linebacker Sam Mills, Ricky Jackson, Pat Swilling, and Vaughn Johnson. In Fangio's 9 seasons in New Orleans, the foursome was voted to 18 Pro Bowls and earned 10 first-team All-Pro selections. Moore is now 89 and retired in Palm Desert, California. He said Fangio was a straight shooter even back then, and that he knew he could always go to him and get an honest opinion.
Whether it's something I liked or didn't like, I go to Vic, he'd tell me what he thought. He was going to express his feelings, his knowledge, and tell you what he believed in. And he was right.
Moore had some great teams with the Saints, and then the Colts, with Fangio as his defensive coordinator. But he never won a playoff game. It still stings. And he's sure Fangio feels not having ever won a Super Bowl, even if he downplays it or doesn't show much emotion.
He's not going to stand up in front of the press and scream and shout and yell and do all those kind of things. He'll express his feelings the way he feels he should, and only he will know what he's doing or how he's handling it. He's not going to talk a lot about it, but he feels it just like anybody does, any coach does that loses a tough game or something like that.
Right, he's same human. Way. You guys are human.
Yeah, he's human.
You guys are human, I mean, right?
Yeah, very human.
Fangio had to take a step back after the Colts, and then 4 miserable years with the expansion Texans. He spent 4 seasons as the Ravens linebackers coach, and then took a college job for the first time as Stanford's defensive coordinator. It was a pivotal year in his life, both professionally and personally. As a coach, it got him hooked up with Jim Harbaugh, who would bring him back to the NFL when he got the 49ers head coaching gig. But it was also around this time that he met Kathy Maruyama, a San Francisco optometrist. Fangio's defense flourished with the 49ers. They went all the way to the Super Bowl. Ed Donatell was Fangio's lieutenant there, and later had stops with the Bears and Broncos. He explained how they got a talented group to buy into their system, which could be applied to how Fangio turned the Eagles' defensive fortunes around in just one season.
Who's this guy, man? This guy's a really good football coach. He's a competitor. He's up for challenges. And, you know, he has a confidence that he'd go in, look at a group, and make it better.
Yeah.
He has that confidence. When he goes in to a new team, he says, I don't want to hear what anybody else thinks. And he also says, which is most guys go and say, I want to watch a bunch of film of these guys and then evaluate him. He says, no, I want to wait till I'm teaching them and on the field with them in minicamp. Then we'll make those judgments.
Dante Whitner was Fangio's safety in San Francisco. He credits the coach with altering the trajectory of his career. He gave some of the finer points on Fangio's now much-imitated scheme.
He understands how to attack protections and what they're taught on the offensive line. He understands what receivers are taught with leverage and body mannerisms. He understands what the quarterback is taught based on the safety's depth and width and how the nickelback is aligned. He's not just teaching his defense. At the same time, he's incorporating what is the offense thinking and how do they want to attack us. So when he teaches those young guys that, they play one step faster.
Yeah.
Right? When you can take a quarterback off of his read with your shoulders and with your read steps and not just turning and running to the middle of the field and get him off his proper read to get him to an improper read, that's because Vic Fangio and guys like Ian Donatell has coached the guys up to a, not just a base level. They're on their secondary and third things when it comes to football and execution.
Yeah.
So, for example, we had a thing where we would know when the quarterback was going to snap the ball. It would be around 4 to 6 seconds on the clock. So when we would get on third down, we would be so poised to be able to show blitzes from other angles because we knew a guy like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady wasn't going to snap the ball to 4 to 6 seconds, which even further confused them, which even shows you the amount of depth and minute detail that Vic Fangio expects and implements on his defense, which is why he's one of the best defensive coordinators and the best that I've ever had the privilege of playing.
Fangio had a knack for evaluating players and not only put them in the best spots at their positions, he sometimes would move a guy to an entirely different spot, just like he did with Eagles linebacker Zach Bond this season.
He can understand who doesn't have the intellectual ability to comprehend the defense as a whole, but they have the athletic ability, and he can tag little things in the call to tell a specific guy that really doesn't, can't comprehend it, to help him play faster. And a player that he did that with specifically was Ahmad Brooks. Ahmad Brooks, coming out of high school, was the number one linebacker in the country. He played middle linebacker. Then he went to the University of Virginia, played middle linebacker. But he was just an athlete. He just made plays off instinct. But Vic, you know, after evaluating him and watching him on film and practice, like, hey, you're not a middle linebacker. You're an edge defensive end, right? So if he couldn't understand the calls, Vic would tag something in the call to tell him where to align, who he has, and nobody else in the room really recognized what he was doing. That's what a genius does.
Yeah.
Other coaches will disregard a player like that. They won't find another role for him to take the defense to another level, right? They'll just disregard him. Oh, he can't pick it up. He's not smart enough. Well, the great innovators, they find a role for you and find a way for you to comprehend it so you can help everybody.
Even though that 49ers team never won a title, its defense was still considered one of the best of its era. And soon teams started copying Fangio's system and started hiring his assistants to run it. He has described his defensive philosophy as death by inches. Joe Marciano said he actually came up with the phrase, but he and Fangio got it by watching Jim Mora operate.
I think we both got it from Jim Mora, the old school way. He says, you guys got to learn as young coaches, when things are going good, that's the time to get on them. And you can't allow, what I interpreted was, no death by inches.
Ed Donatel had a slightly different interpretation of death by inches.
One is that, you know, he feels that if you're not detailed, you will die by inches. That's the way I interpret it.
Dante Whitner said that Fangio's death by inches defense forces offensive coordinators and quarterbacks to go against their nature and be patient.
He's just referring to human nature. When you think about any walk of life, how many people are truly patient in their desired field? Not many.
Yeah.
So when you translate to the game of football, if a quarterback and an offense can't get the big play, if they can't consistently stay in rhythm, then they'll make a mistake. And if you can just take away the big plays, the explosive plays, and you force them to have to execute and be patient, they'll falter. They will not remain patient.
Yeah.
And that's basically what he's saying. We're not going to give up the deep ball. We're not going to give up explosive plays. We're going to make you beat us, and you're going to have to match our physicality and our intellect and our execution, and you might have a chance to beat us. So that's what that means to me.
They're all rooting for Fangio to finally get his Super Bowl, but none more so than Kathy Maruyama, his girlfriend of 15 years, the optometrist he met in San Fran when he was at Stanford. She was at the Super Bowl in 2013 when Fangio took his French Quarter walk. She said she didn't remember the moment, but even if she had, she's not sure Fangio would have told her much about his feelings.
Even if he comes back from a walk, he doesn't say what he was thinking about, really, because he's pretty not introverted, but he's introspective, and he doesn't talk that much about what he's thinking.
Yes.
He just kind of crosses it himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Fangio doesn't talk for the sake of talking. It takes a lot to get him to laugh.
I don't know who said it that says they've never heard him laugh before. And all day I'm trying to, when I see him, I'm trying to make him laugh. And, you know, it's kind of hard. You know, it's, the only time I've seen him laugh is when he's on the golf course and he sinks a 30-foot putt or something. He's really excited about that. but he's, you know, he's just a solid guy. And he's just very, he's serious for the most part, but he's caring. So that's why, you know, it works for me.
Fangio told me just the other day here in New Orleans on Super Bowl opening night that he actually wished he laughed more.
It takes a lot to get you to laugh.
Yeah, unfortunately.
What does make you laugh?
I don't know. not a lot, but you know, that's a negative, you know? I remember when Jim Valvano, that famous speech, got to laugh, cry, what else he say, do it all. I don't get that. I'm a little light on the laughing.
Maruyama, his colleagues, friends, and family will take just a smile on Sunday if Fangio finally wins the Super Bowl. If the Eagles beat the Chiefs and deny coach Andy Reid and quarterback Patrick Mahomes a three-peat, it's likely Fangio's defense will play a huge role in stopping them.
Brady, he is throwing it deep for the end zone, and it is incomplete. And the game is over. The game is over. The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. is for you. Let the celebration begin.
There's going to be a parade on Broad Street. Hey, man, if this is a dream, don't wake me up. We're going to have...
The guy he's called every Super Bowl the Eagles have ever been to, Merle Reese. He was there in New Orleans in 1981, in Jacksonville in 2005, Minneapolis in 2018, and Glendale in 2023. 2024 was a monster year for the longtime Eagles radio broadcaster. He was enshrined in the media wing of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in August and saw the Eagles do a remarkable 180 turn during the season. Now, as his 48th year behind the mic draws to a close, he's hoping to cap it off with another championship call.
So you may be the only one of the few people probably, though, is that the last time the Super Bowl was played, the Eagles played the Super Bowl in New Orleans. Do you have any memories of what that was like and how any of that can impact, I don't know, what happened
well,
44 years later?
The only thing I remember playing in New Orleans. Yeah, I do remember that the Eagles were very disciplined and very tight and very hardworking, and supposedly from what we heard, the Raiders were out on Bourbon Street every night and closing bars. And the Eagles came into that game, they were pretty tight. And there were three interceptions that turned that game around before the Eagles could ever get started. And they never got back into it.
So what you're saying is that these Eagles should party a little more on Bourbon.
Well, I'm not saying that because Dick Vermeil was a great coach and he knew what was right for that team. And maybe even though the Eagles beat the Raiders during the regular season, maybe ultimately it was Plunkett's time to really take everything apart and just let it go. I mean, they were that good that day, and the Eagles, it wasn't a really close game. It was it was very disappointing. And the other thing I remember, Jeff, more than anything else, is getting on the plane with the players the next day to come home. And we got on the plane, and I expected to see the players really down. And they weren't. They were very upbeat, and they said, and I've talked to Eagles about this. So I said, the players were saying, you know, you have to be here. You have to play in one of these things to really know what it's about. We're going to go back next year, and we're going to have the experience, and we're going to win. Well, next year didn't come for another, 26 years, 24 years? And that's what I say to players. Players sometimes think, you know, this is such a good team, and we're even going to be better next year. And I say to them, maybe, but you're never going to play with this team again. You're never going to play with this team again because guys leave, there are free agents, new guys come in, there are injuries that you never expected that come up. There are no guarantees. So you have to play this game like it's the last chance you ever have, and there's no tomorrow. I remember that very, very well, seeing that on that day, and then it never came again.
Well, you were there when they won their first one, obviously, Super Bowl 52 in 2017, and you wore a specific tie. What tie was that?
It was my Gold Marion tie.
Yes.
I just bought a new, this morning on my way here, I brought a brand new navy blue Marion tie.
Is that because you re-wore that one two years ago?
2 years ago, and it didn't work, so I needed a new tie.
And is it similar?
No, it's straight. The other one had the little emblems all over it. This is a straight navy blue tie with the red cross stripe and the Marion emblem right at the peak at the end.
Sounds very nice. Last question, Merle. I mean, so much of the sight lines are important for you. Have you scouted that out yet? Do you know? And then I know you've already said before, like, you never think about your championship call.
No.
They win a Super Bowl.
No.
So, you know, in terms of like what it's going to take for you to call the game, you ready for that?
I'm ready for that because I prepare like I prepare for every game. Cindy goes around the house yelling, you know, 87, I'll go Travis Kelce, or 9, JoJo Smith Schuster, or, you know, 10, you know, Isaiah Pacheco, and I keep going all week. And then the other thing is I do the same. It's actually easier to prepare for a Super Bowl than it is for a preseason game, because preseason game you have a 90-man roster and guys who aren't known to anyone but their mothers. How many times have all of us seen Kansas City on Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Thursday Night Football? And then I went back the other night and I rewatched the entire Super Bowl 57 game and made some mental notes. So I prepare the same way I prepare for every game, except it's actually easier because of the familiarity we have with that team. And you asked me about the sight lines.
Yes.
That changes.
Same spot you were for Super Bowl 15.
No. And that's because if for Super Bowl 15 we were midway up, perfect height, 50-yard line or maybe 45-yard line, we were just right there. But when they do stadiums over again, they use those great seats for super boxes where they can make the most money. So I'm on the same level you are. If you know, the press box is up, practically touching the top of the dome, and I'm looking down at little ants, and more often than I like using binoculars.
Well, Merrill, thanks a lot. Best of luck this weekend, and obviously best of luck to your Eagles.
to the Eagles of the fans, and I love the team, I always have, but I will be as impartial in terms of what I see as I always am. I will say what I see, but you will hear it reflected in my voice.
This has indeed been Merrill Reese's Way. This has been Uncovering the Birds, a production of the Philadelphia Inquirer and KOW News Radio original podcast. Our producer is KOW News Radio's Brian Seltzer. Tom Rickard is KOW News Radio's director of podcasting. The executive producer from the Philadelphia Inquirer is Renee Eiffel. Special thanks to Sports Radio 94 WIP, NBC Sports, and NBC Sports Philadelphia. If you're enjoying Uncovering the Birds, please leave us a rating and a review. Listen to Uncovering the Birds free on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts, or go to Inquirer.com/podcasts. I'm Jeff McLean. You can follow me on X, Blue Sky, or Threads at Jeff_McLean, or search my name on any social media platform. Look for another dispatch from New Orleans later this week here on Uncovering the Birds. Thanks for listening.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.